Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. It's Farmer Friday on our show today, and if you've been listening for more than a week, you know what this means. It means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, AgPhDMedia, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. All right, Brian, do you want to dive right into the mailbag? You got a couple things you want to talk about first.
Well, the first thing I was going to mention, and then we get to mailbag, is just tiling. We've been having a lot of fun on our farm here the last 2 weeks because there are some areas that we haven't been able to get into for a long time to get tiling. Now, granted, we could have gotten in there, I suppose, but it was just wet, and it's so much easier now. I mean, we're not getting stuck. We can put tile in even in the lowest of the lows. We haven't had rain in over 3 months, so... Yep, you can look at the downside of it and say, well, the top end of our yields got hit a little bit. But the plus side of this no rain deal is, man, are we getting a lot of work done right now. We're just about done with harvest. We're coming along good on tiling. So I'm super excited. And, you know, the other big thing is commodity prices have gone up like 25% in the last couple of months. So, yeah, things are certainly looking up on the farm. I am excited.
All right, let's dive into the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
Jason sent a question in. We were talking about grain bin indicators, and he said, I wonder if you have any recommendations about brand or style of indicators. I'd like to purchase some, but I've seen them all over the board. Just wondering if you had any specific suggestions.
Yeah, there are a bunch of them. I mean, we've had Tony with Farm Shop MFG on a couple of times recently on the show. And, I mean, Farm Shop MFG has good stuff. But, yeah, there are lots of companies out there that have units. I guess I would encourage people to have those. So it's very helpful. So you're not running stuff over, which I have done personally enough times over the years. So when you run it out of the bin, that's no good. And then the other thing is my dad would get after me, of course, because, oh, he filled the bin too full and now we can't level it off and everything. And so anyway, it's usually a good investment. They're pretty cheap.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got this one from Guy in Hawaii who said, years ago when we had sugar cane, some growers in the area would add urea to Dalapon to kill grass, and I thought urea was something like bait to cause the grass to take the herbicide in together with the fertilizer. Watching your show, you seem to be saying ammonium sulfate's often added to lower the pH of the spray solution and also to tie up some of the hard water particles like calcium. I've been using rainwater catching rainwater to use as my spray water, which is slightly acidic. And I don't believe it to be containing many nutrients or hard water particles. I've been adding ammonium sulfate when I spray Roundup or Liberty. I'm wondering, am I wasting my time adding the ammonium sulfate or do I need it for something else in there than lowering pH and tying up hard water?
Yes, that is a great question. And absolutely, you still need it in there for the nitrogen component of it, especially. So Liberty, it's part of how the product works. You have to have a nitrogen source. With Roundup, there are certain nitrogen-sensitive weeds, like water hemp, palm, pigweed, just as an example, where if you leave the nitrogen out, you don't get quite as good a performance. So yes, we often talk about pH going down and tying up the hard water ions, but let's not forget about the nitrogen sensitivity of certain weeds and the fact that you need it with the Liberty, plus the fact that you get better intake, better uptake, better movement through the plant when that plant has a little bit of fertilizer source like nitrogen and sulfur.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from Charlie, and Charlie says, you guys were talking about herbicide modes of action. I'm wondering about salt pH and how it relates to herbicide effectiveness. I wonder if he's missing some comments in there. If he's talking about salty soils, pH of soils, and the effectiveness of herbicides.
Are you sure? I don't know what he's after there exactly, because that's of melding a few different ideas. So, I don't know specifically what the question is, so I hate to really comment too much. Other than, yes, Darren, if you phrase it, okay, he's worried about using a herbicide on salty soils. Yep, here's what I worry about most, carryover. I had this come up, this is probably 20 years ago, with somebody I was consulting for, and they had a carryover issue with stinger. And I'm like, what? Carryover stinger? I know the rabies. No way. Let me see your soil test. And it was super salty and had a fair amount of sodium. The problem was they had put on crazy amounts of manure there. Well, when your salt levels are too high, you kill a lot of the bacteria that would break down a herbicide. So if you're going to use a residual herbicide and expect it's going to deteriorate in a normal amount of time and you can run with a normal rotational restriction, now you've got a real problem. And the effectiveness of the herbicide, you know, a lot of these herbicides are contact killers, so that part doesn't hurt anything. But if it was a residual herbicide, I don't know that I've ever seen anything that it's better or worse with the salt there. I could argue it both ways, so I don't know that I'd be worried about that. I just am most worried about the carryover.
All right, thanks for the question, Charlie. Yeah, if you could give us a little more clarification on what you want, if that's not exactly it, you could certainly respond back, and we would try to get you answered as best we can. Get this one from AA, who said, you were talking about fall herbicide application. I'm wondering, which method do you use with that? Are you running it through a ground spray rig? Are you tilling it in? What are some of the best practices there?
Yeah, typically you just spray it on the soil surface. It all depends on what you're using, but rarely are we doing tillage in the fall. We usually are talking about things that can burn down existing weeds and leave you some residual to go into the spring clean.
All right, thanks, AA. Appreciate that. It is Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd love to hear what's going on in your farm, how harvest is coming along, planting in some areas, and everything else. It's just such a busy time right now. And if you're doing something fun on your farm, we'd love to hear about that. Also, if you have an agronomic question, please call in. We would love to help you out if we can. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Let's head out to Ohio. We've got Brett with us right now. Brett, how's it going?
All right, how are you today?
I tell you
beautiful sunny day here.
Yeah, it's beautiful here too. I'm fired up. Our market prices are going up. We just got done with soybean harvest. Our yields were surprisingly good. I'd say it's a good time right now.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we just got into the soybeans the last few days. We've didn't get them planted as soon and got them up and going and we fungicided them, so they were. Actually, all the beans around here are just now getting ripe, but good crop, very good crop.
Awesome. We need it. We need a good crop. And, you know, the demand is up, too, where there is a lot of demand for soybeans out there. So it's a good time for farmers to deliver a good crop to the market.
What a difference a year or two makes, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And, you know, you think about it, all the crops that we're growing out there, our corn prices are up locally here, which we're really happy about. The ethanol plants are starting to roll again. Fuel demand's going up. It's starting to turn, at least I hope, anyway.
Yes, I'm planting wheat right now because the wheat price is up. So, you know, we're going to plant a little bit more wheat, and we've always planted a few acres, but we've had good luck with wheat and double crop beans.
There you go.
Even though we're a little farther north, we've had good luck the last few years with them. So,
hey Brett, talk to us about what do you do in terms of tillage, in terms of field prep, then when you're heading to wheat? Are you no tilling it right in there?
Well, I was going to, but we put on, instead of commercial fertilizer, we put on poultry manure.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
So I wanted it worked in, so I used a turbo till and worked it in a little bit, and got it. They spread it yesterday afternoon. I finished up last night. We're planting today. So, I usually no-till it. A little different, though. I plant it with a 15-inch corn planter or bean planter, and then doubling back, we got the seed cups to plant wheat, and we've done it for the last couple years, and it's been good.
Interesting. Yeah, there's so many different ways. We do get a lot of questions from non-farmers and even farmers sometimes as they're heading down the road, and they're like, wow, that guy's doing things a lot differently than me. So kudos to you for trying something different, and if you found something that works for you guys, that's awesome.
Yeah, we like to step out of bounds every once in a while and try a lot of new stuff. But that's how you learn.
Yeah,
that's the main thing is we're always trying to learn something. So
yeah, my dad was the same way too. He would always talk to us about that. If we aren't screwing up a little bit, we aren't really stepping outside the bounds and not really growing and finding something that might even be better.
That's right. That's right. You never know until you try it.
All right, so you're flexing into just a few more wheat acres. What does corn look like right in your part of Ohio?
Corn we struggled a little bit with. We were dry just about the time it was starting to fill. So we were really worried about it, but walked some fields 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and actually was out in some first part of this week, and I think we're going to be surprised. It's going to be a good crop. Not a bumper crop, but it's going to be a good crop.
Good, good. Yeah, that's, you know, even if we can just get average, and I think on our farm this year, we're going to be right around average by the time all is said and done. And wow, if you complain about having an average crop, I know we're disappointed. We always wanted to get our records and everything. But man, if we get an average crop and we get a decent market price, that's not a bad place to be.
No, it's not. I'll take this any time compared to what we've been through the last couple of years. Oh. That's for sure. Because we had a real tough time last year. Getting everything planted and a tough crop and no price, and that just don't pay too many bills. So yes, we've been blessed this year.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Brett, good luck to you here as you're finishing up planting that wheat and getting harvest done as well. Stay safe on the farm.
All right, thank you, Dan.
Let's head over to Illinois. We got David on with us right now. David, how's it going?
It's a beautiful day in the springtime around here, about 83 degrees, so what more does a guy want? And the wind blowing.
isn't that crazy? Mid-October, and we're getting this kind of weather. Now, it's not going to last forever. We know that, but we got to enjoy it when we can.
That's right. I always take this kind of weather this time of year. So.
All right. So is it drying out some of the corn a little bit for you, or what? How's it helping you on your farm?
Corn so far, we're between a fourth and a third done. We've been down to 17%. I got into just a touch of replant corn. Planted June 3rd the other day, and it was going about 30 yet, so we pulled out of that real quick and switched over to beans. Just got part of a field opened up yet, so I can't even tell you on yields on that. Corn has been going anywhere from mid-240s down to, we had a 150, but that was because the coons got into one number and just absolutely cleaned it. So,
isn't it crazy how they find one hybrid? I know deer, too, we had a plot where we had a whole bunch of different hybrids, and the deer just went right down one row, and, man, it must have been tasty because they hammered it pretty hard.
We've got a pioneer plot, did the same thing. It's pretty bad when the intern calls up the seed rep and she says, "You've got a green snap out here on this one number." He said, "We haven't had any wind." She sent him a picture. She said, "That's not green snap, that's coons." So, yeah.
it's fun, and people don't realize all the things that the crazy things that happen out in nature, and farmers get to see a lot of that. I've got a friend that sprays a lot of hot sauce around the end rows of his corn trying to keep things out. He claims it works, but I don't know. We haven't ever tried that.
No, I haven't tried anything like that. I am going to try something different this next year, though. I am going to try some 60-inch row corn.
Really?
And put the cover crop in between, for cows. And from what I've been reading and watching YouTube videos, those guys are very impressed with it. And, you're looking anywhere from a little below to a little bit above average yield, and maybe even compared to 30-inch rows. So I'm going to try it. So
Yeah, that would be really interesting. You think about it, if you can get that extra sunlight down, can you get a second ear on those? And if you can, all of a sudden, well, what's the point in doing it the other way?
Yeah, because they're wanting to use either a semi-flex or a flex ear. They claim those ears will get bigger, and you're talking your biomass from 30 to 60-inch rows, go take it times 10 so on the cover crops. So, yeah, that's pretty wild too. So
how would you do the cover crop then? Would you seed it at the same time you're seeding that corn, or would you let the corn get up a little bit first at maybe a foot tall or something and then come in with cover crop?
Everything I've seen, and I'm going to try it this way, the V4 to V6 come in, and have a drill set up where I can drill it in. So do it that way. I'm planning on putting cover crop in this fall, some wheat. Use that for cover crop. And then I've also got oats and turnips that I'm getting ready to graze cows on. I might try it on some of that too. So.
This is turning out to be a fun show, David. We were just talking to Brett over in Ohio, who's trying some different things and not afraid to step outside the box. I would say in your part of Illinois, 60-inch row corn is going to definitely open some eyes.
Let's put it this way. Everybody, I say, "Do you want to try some next year with me?" They all say, "We'll see how yours works first."
Well, I don't know. Sometimes, and I would say this, we definitely try not to take really big financial risks on the farm, because we already take enough as farmers. I mean, come on, we're putting all our money out there for nature just to toss around in the wind and sun. But to try something like that is pretty good. And my dad always said, when you put some money in, all right, I got some acres that we're doing this on, you're going to become an expert real fast.
Yeah. Well, that one guy was saying that it started out with a 60-inch row corn. He said, think of it this way. 10% of your acres should be something, a new variety, new chemical, something every year. 10% of that, which would be 1% of your acres, try something off the wall. If it doesn't work, you say you tried it. If it works, you try more the next year then. So,
yeah, if nothing else, we got something fun to talk about over the winter, that's for sure. Oh, that's awesome. Well, hey, David, we got to run, but thank you so much for the conversation, and good luck to you when you try that. That's going to be really interesting to hear how it turns out.
You guys have a fun, safe fall, okay?
You bet. You as well. Thank you. It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm in the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side, so it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the End Zone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions. It is a busy time on the farm right now, no matter where you're at, and we'd love to hear what's happening on your farm. 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We've got Jeff on with us now down in Arkansas. Jeff, how are you?
Pretty good, Darren. Just watching Delta move in. How are you?
Well, here's the problem with that. It's probably not so good for you guys, but we are really excited if some of that moisture pushes up to us. We've been really dry.
Well, we haven't missed one yet. So it's been interesting with all the little ones that's come up through, and this one doesn't look too little right now, but looks like we're going to get, they're saying between, depends on which weather forecaster you listen to and the cone of inconsistency.
Yes.
Anywhere from a half inch to 6 inches.
So, oh, my goodness.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, six would be a mess. Oh, yeah. No, we don't want to,
yeah,
don't want to see that.
We still got rice in the field.
Okay.
No, not us. We still have rice in the field.
All right, talk to us about the rice then. What? So you said you've had tons of moisture this year, so maybe not such a bad thing in the middle part of the year, but certainly not good at harvest time.
You know, it hasn't hurt us too bad. This one worries me, but so far it's been pretty good. It's been a really good rice crop. It's helped with the electric bill a little bit to be able to shut the wells off when we get an inch or two rain. But it's been pretty good this year, so I have absolutely zero complaints on that right now. As long as we don't get a bunch of wind out of this, you know, the rain's not going to kill us unless it's just an absolute downpour. But if we don't get any rain, we should keep everything up and make harvest not so bad. But we only have a couple. We have about 205 acres of rice left to cut.
Okay. So that's good. How about other crops for your farm? What else have you got out there to harvest, and how does that look?
We've taken about 1,000 acres of beans off. We have about 500 acres of soybeans left. and all we had this year was rice and soybeans.
Okay. So the rainfall was okay for the rice. It was pretty good for your soybeans too then?
Yeah, we were around 1,000. We cut right at 1,080 acres total so far on beans. And right now we're running, you know, for us, dry land beans, 40 bushel is a good crop on dry land. Our dry lands have been in the 50s. And irrigated beans have been, you know, good irrigated bean crop is 55 to 60. You know, just depends on if you get the water on there perfect and all that good stuff. And our irrigated beans have been, you know, in the 55, 60. And we had one field that we actually cut in the 70s, and it was really good. It just hit everything perfect. But not having pivots and doing flood irrigating, you know, you get a lot of cold water damage on the first at the top of the fields coming out of the poly pipe, so it really knocks the yield down a little bit.
Yeah, there are just challenges to every system, and I know some guys say, "Oh man, it's so easy if you have water available." Well, it's not necessarily perfect either, but yeah, some years it helps more than others, no doubt about that. We're talking with Jeff down in Arkansas. Well, Jeff, hopefully you guys missed the 6-inch rain. Maybe we limit it to a 1/2 inch, or better yet, maybe you send a couple inches up here instead.
I'll pipe it all up to you. I don't need any right now.
That would be great. Awesome. Well, thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate having you on.
All right. Thanks, Darren. Thanks. Bye.
All right, Brian, got a few interesting questions in the Ag PhD mailbag to dive back into, and had one come in from John in Michigan, and he said, I've got a test for you to take a look at. I'm wondering about heavy metals in biosolids, and I can't really read the test very well here, to be honest with you, but just in general, Brian, talk about heavy metals in biosolids. How big an issue is that, and what should growers look for on their tests?
Well, I would say this. We have to always be concerned about it, number one, but if you're just doing a little application for 1 year, it's rarely a big issue. So we do encourage you to test these biosolids and see what they have for heavy metals in there. And then you can go to the EPA's website. There's plenty of information out there. I don't have it right in front of me here what the legal limits are, but just follow what the legal limits are and you should be in good shape. But use your head a little bit and just say, all right, let's put it this way. The dose always makes the poison. So if I'm just putting it on one time, 1 year, usually not a big deal, especially if your levels are low. But yeah, if you're starting to do this and you say, ooh, I want to do a 20-year deal with this city and I'm going to get biosolids or something like that, then yeah, you just got to run the calculations. It's not that difficult. At some of our soils clinics, we have talked about that. I'll see if I can pull that up here quick before we get to the end of this segment. But I mean, the limits are actually fairly high for a lot of the heavy metals.
Okay. Yeah, we can rejoin that conversation here in just a little bit. And in the meantime, want to talk a little bit of chicken litter, just getting Dave pulled up here from Indiana. Alex, if you want to put him on. Dave, how are you doing today?
Just great. We're done with harvest. We tried 2 tons of chicken litter. I mean, it's composted chicken litter. We're working it in. It's blasted dry. Won't hardly go in. Our tillage tool won't, but anyhow, here and there. I was asking my agronomist about doing some fall testing. We're due for that. Do that every 2 years. And he thought it was too dry to soil test. But I'd interfere with some of the results. What's your opinion?
Well, we're out doing some soil testing on our farm, and we're pretty dry here too. And, you know, we've been looking at some of the tests. Brian, would you say that our soil tests have been surprising to you at all?
No, I agree with you.
The dry is going to influence things just a little bit, but it's still the best information you got. Now, if you knew, hey, there's an inch of rain coming and I can get back out there a week after that, because we are pretty early yet, you may have some time. But in the meantime, you want to get this chicken litter put out there. So I would just go ahead and pull the test. impressive as me.
Okay. All right.
Hey, talk to me for a second. You said it was composted chicken litter. Is it still stinking to high heaven, or did that help a lot?
Oh, no, that helps a tremendous amount. It's unbelievable. We've been using it every 2 years in the fall. It's hard to get it, tell how it's going to break down as far as that goes. It's dry. I mean, it's only like 15% moisture or something like that. I mean, it's very dusty. It's very uniform in what it is. My agronomist, of course, the chicken farm brings it up, gives us analysis, and my agronomist goes out and takes some of the dump loads and sends it in, gets analysis off that, and it's very close. I mean, it's very homogeneous mixture of, we really like it as far as an odor. It's gnarly for about the first 24 to 36 hours. And it's not like a normal chicken litter that just drives you out for a long time before you compost it. So, but I got some very particular neighbors. Just got through talking to one, and we applied on his farm he lives close to. He says, David, I understand it. This you're using now isn't near as bad as it used to be. So I think it's a very good product. It spreads very even. You don't get any feathers. You don't get any eggshells. You don't get, you know, anything. It's just
I think
very dark in color, very homogeneous mixture.
Yeah, that composting sure helps a lot, and a lot less material to haul around, too, when you take all that moisture out of there, too. So, yeah, Dave, I'd go ahead and get the soil samples pulled and get her spread.
Potassium is the one, though, Darren, that we will usually see some differences on.
When it's dry.
When it's dry. I don't get that worried about it. You've got to have some data with which to operate, and most of the values are going to be fairly similar, but yeah, sometimes in dry soil we'll see a little bit higher level of K reflected in some tests, like the Malic 3, and it could be the opposite in some other tests that are run.
Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer Amaranth and Water Hemp with Tough 5EC. Manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expect it soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got an email from Russell in North Mississippi, and he said, I've got some soybean stems that started snapping over at V3, V4, and it's continued throughout the season. There's a little bit of scarring around the stem. I didn't notice that we had any slugs out there early, but that has happened to us before, that we've had some slugs. I'm just kind of curious. We put Valor down with our burn down at 2 ounces, and then we sprayed Metribuzin and Metolachlor right after planting. And I found the same stem breakage in my conventional tilled fields and also in my no-till fields. Just wondering what you have seen that causes soybean stems to snap. All right. Well, thanks for the email, Russell. I know stem canker could be a problem for you. Also, you know, when you look at that herbicide mix, Brian, do you see anything there? I know we've seen it with high rates of pendimethalin just all laid on the soil surface, but when you say you've seen it in your tilled fields and your no-till fields, I don't know if the herbicide necessarily is to blame. Certainly could be some bug pressure out there too. I don't know, boy, there's a lot of things that it could be.
Yeah, I have almost never seen that. I mean, without an insect being present, or like you say, during the pendimethalin, but that's usually when the plant gets a lot bigger. So say it again. He used a PPO, he used Metribuzin, and what else?
Yeah, he used 2 ounces of Valor, and then he used Metribuzin and Metolachlor right after planting.
How much Metribuzin?
Well, he said he sprayed 1 pint of a product called Prezidual that was a premix of Metribuzin and Metolachlor. So it doesn't sound like a very high rate.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've never heard of that product before, so I don't know how high the rates of Metribuzin Group 15 are in there. I'll say this. I don't like Group 15 sprayed right after planting. We've seen crop injury from that. So that could be a little bit of an issue. The Valor could have been a little bit of an issue. Metribuzin probably not. But anyway, could that have weakened it? Yes. But I still think I would look more at the insect thing, because we just don't see this very often. The other thing that will weaken the stalks, obviously, is if you don't have adequate levels of K in your soil. So if you show us the soil test, we could take a look at that for you as well. So it's possible that it's potassium, maybe a little bit on manganese or copper, because those affect stem health as well. But potassium is usually the big one. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say at this point. In the future, if that ever happens and you see it happening, then send us some pictures right away, and then we can help you better identify it immediately. Because otherwise, so much after the fact, we're all just kind of guessing at this point.
All right. Thanks, Russell. We appreciate that. This one came in from Summer, who said, you were talking about corn fungicide applications and pushing them a little bit later, like maybe V8 rather than doing it early like V3, V4. Is there a specific growth stage where with all corns you'll see the ear leaf fully expand so you could target that and make sure you've got that ear leaf out, or is it going to vary a little bit depending on maturity of corn, et cetera?
Yep, it's going to vary just a little bit. We don't know for sure which one the ear leaf is going to be initially either. So we're kind of guessing, but yeah, somewhere in that V8, V9, we assume that the ear leaf is going to be starting to get exposed or is exposed. And the reason why we were talking about this is we haven't seen fantastic results spraying real early, V3 to maybe V5 at the latest. But we have seen a little bit better results a little later. And our theory with that was, hey, if the ear leaf is out and we can protect that, it's somewhat like the flag leaf in wheat. The flag leaf in wheat has such an impact on yield, that's the one you want to protect the most. So anyway, that's why we kind of ended up with what we did. But I would say, yeah, there's no exact thing. Just if it's me, I'm shooting for V8, V9. The other thing is the later you get, the more you have to be concerned about any spray adjuvant that could be in there. You start getting past V8 and it's possible that you could get arrested ear syndrome. Basically, you're going to do damage to the ear with certain spray adjuvants. So you might want to leave the adjuvants out if you're spraying real late.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got this one from Adam, and he said, I just got my own soil probe, so I can now do my own soil sampling. Good job, Adam. Congratulations. His questions, he said, I'm wondering, do you know of a grid app, preferably free, that I could put on my iPad? Right now, I just want to use it for reference points for each sample and in time go on to making my own variable rate maps. Also, with variable rate technology, is it better to sample and spread based on grids alone, or should a person be sampling based on soil types? I used to run a dry spreader for the co-op for a long time, and variable rate by soil type just wasn't very common. I am in the Sioux City, Iowa area.
Okay, so first of all, you can use the AgPhD Soils app. That is a free app. You can use it for reference and that kind of thing. If you send samples in, it gives you discounted soil sampling, just so you know, so it will save you money that way if you do choose to use it for soil sampling. But anyway, in terms of using soils maps to do variable rate, I am not a believer in that at all, because the accuracy of those soils maps is, to me, pretty questionable. So what I like is small grids or small zones, and then I think we can do a really good job and real accurate. And that's the best we can do until we get to something where literally you can drive across your field and sense different soil fertility levels across every inch. There's nothing that exists like that today. So small grids and small zones, in my opinion, is the way to go.
All right. Thanks for the question. We really appreciate this one. This one comes from BA, who is in Nigeria. He said, I'm just getting started with larger scale farming, and I am a graduate of agricultural and biosystems engineering. I've really enjoyed your content online. I'm wondering, do you do some training or internships virtually so I can learn more about farming? Hey, thank you so much, BA. We really appreciate that you're checking us out, and good luck to you as you're getting started with a larger scale farm in Nigeria. I would say this, I don't know that we necessarily would do training like that, but we do have a lot of content and we put it all out there for free. So you can certainly find some of the Ag PhD TV segments, whether it's on YouTube or whatnot. You can also get all the content from our radio show as well. Any other suggestions you'd have, Brian?
No, we have all kinds of great free information that we put out there on lots of different agronomic topics.
All right. Thank you, BA. I get this one from Tom. He said, my wife and I live in Southern California. We're in our 40s. We have no kids, and we are tired of California and want to move. We want to find a place that doesn't have a lot of humidity, is fairly close, within 30 miles or so to a big city, and we don't want to have much snow to deal with. We just want to have a small farm and a barn and some animals, that type of thing, and we can work remotely. So we're open to wherever, but the weather really does matter to us. Any suggestions on where we should look?
Well, not the Midwestern United States if you don't like humidity. It is very humid in the Midwest. So even like where we're at in eastern South Dakota, you think of South Dakota as dry, and I think of South Dakota as dry, but we have tremendous humidity here because of the crops that we raise during the summertime. Western South Dakota is fine, except for you get snow. So, yeah, I don't know exactly where that place would be, but, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe Arizona somewhere. If you want low humidity.
Yeah, it's tough because as you move south, you end up getting a lot of humidity. So you almost have to go south and west to get into a pretty dry climate.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's going to narrow it down for you when the weather is the number one thing. And like you say, with animals and so forth, you just have to be smart about giving them good shelter wherever you're at, because whether it's in the north, we were just talking to a cattle producer up in southern Canada, and he was just talking about the harsh winters there and what they do to take care of the animals. Same thing for the heat. I've been down through Arizona, been on some livestock farms there and some big dairies, and yeah, they've got sprinklers, they've got fans, they got a lot of things. So if it gets too warm, that can be a concern for the animals also. Thanks for the question, though. Really appreciate that, Tom, and good luck to you. We'll continue digging into the Ag PhD mailbag and taking your calls and questions right after this.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's dive back into the Ag PhD mailbag. We got one from Aaron here. He said, I'm raising conventional corn in eastern South Dakota. I've grown up on the farm. Dad always raised Roundup Ready corn, but we've started raising conventional corn here the last couple years. However, we're seeing a brand new weed to us that's really making conventional corn tough. It's woolly cupgrass. Do you have any suggestions for me in my conventional corn? I am rotating it with soybeans, which, by the way, are also conventional.
Yeah, the conventional thing makes it difficult because both Liberty and Roundup are amazing on woolly cupgrass. We used to deal with woolly cup a lot, not on our farm, but I used to with a lot of the farmers I worked with prior to Roundup Ready and Liberty Link corn coming out. So my suggestion, since Eradicane is now off the market, is use Balance Flex. That'll be pretty decent. You'll be surprised at how much that will do for you to reduce the pressure. post-emerge, I'm probably going to go, I'd say, either Laudis or Impact plus a little bit of atrazine. And after you've done those two shots, worst case scenario, there is always the option of Accent, but you can't go too late with Accent over the top. Otherwise, you might have to run drop nozzles if the corn gets big. But yeah, if I just did those two things, a good stout rate of balanced flex pre, and then I'm going to run, well, you know, as I say that, Darren, I probably better not recommend that because that's going to double up on our HPPD. I'd have to worry a little about carryover if we're going to rotate back to soybeans. So let's put it this way. If I'm going continuous corn, I'm going to run a full rate of balanced flex. Then I'm going to run 3 ounces of Laudis or 3/4 of an ounce of Impact plus a half pound of atrazine, okay? If I'm going to rotate to soybeans, I'm probably going to put the balanced flex down. I might still run, let's call it an ounce or something of Laudis, so a reduced rate along with maybe some dicamba and a little atrazine to try to burn back whatever is there. The balance to me, though, is the key, and the balance is better than the post-emerge Laudis or Impact. What do you think, Darren?
Well, that is a tricky weed, and we used to have that back in the 1990s, and a lot of guys were really struggling, and then Roundup Ready Corn came out, and we had a really cheap post-emerge option. So my question for follow-up would be to Aaron, why are you raising the conventional corn? Is there a premium that you're getting? Is there something else you're trying to do? Because I get the conventional soybeans in that part of the world. There are some pretty decent premiums out there, and a lot of guys are trying to go for that. I understand that, but we are seeing some of the guys that have been doing conventional corn going back to just straight Roundup Ready corn, at least, to try to fight some of the weeds like woolly cup, because it's been a tough one. The other thing on that soybean end of the rotation is just doing a really, really good job on woolly cup, which we've got some great options, and they aren't super expensive on the soybean side between trifluralin or pendimethalin down and coming back over the top with clethodim or something that's really inexpensive now.
Yeah, to your point there, you need to get 100% control in soybeans because it is going to be tougher in corn.
Yep. Well, good luck to you, Aaron. The woolly cup grass thing is, I've heard from more than one grower about that started to be a bigger issue for the guys in conventional corn. So maybe something you just need to rotate away from. Or like I say, try and hit it hard in that other rotation. Ted from Iowa had another grass question here. He said, we're seeing some foxtail escapes in our corn this year at harvest. I wonder if you would look at our herbicide program and give us some ideas of what we might change. Sure, Ted, absolutely. He said, we are using Resicor down, and we're following with either Status, or this year we went with Diflex because it was much cheaper. And it's worked great for us on...
Not enough Group 15.
Yeah, he said it's worked great on the broadleaves, just hasn't worked on the grass.
Yep, so either increase the amount of Group 15 with your pre, so in other words, spike the Resicor with a little more Harness or Surpass. It's already in Resicor, you just have to bump the rate. Or throw in something post-emerge like Outlook, Warrant, Surpass, Harness, Zidua, any one of the Group 15s.
Yep.
But one way or the other, you need more Group 15. That's all you need to do, and it'll solve that problem.
Yep.
Probably spend an extra $5.
The other thing, just like our last question, we were talking about a corn-soybean rotation, and Ted doesn't give us a rotation here, but if you are rotating with soybeans, again, just make sure you do an awesome job on soybeans. Don't let those annual grasses go to seed, and you'll have less to fight the next year, too. Great question, Ted. Thank you. This one comes from Jared in Ohio. He said, we're seeding winter wheat, and I've got a couple of questions for you. First of all, how important is seed treatment? Some years for us, it has really paid. Other years, it hasn't paid at all. And I'm wondering, is this something that I could cut or something that I just need to grin and bear it and put it on every year, thinking every once in a while it will pay big?
Right, yeah, because here's the problem. You don't know if this is the year where it will pay big or where it won't. Now, right now, like in our farm, when we haven't had rain in 3 months, if I had to guess, I would say that a fungicide treatment won't pay, but I don't know. And I also don't know if the insecticide I'm going to throw in or the biologicals I'm going to throw in are going to pay or they aren't. I don't know. So that's the whole problem. And all you should do, and our suggestion is, just look at, okay, on average, is this going to make me money? If it makes you money on average, then yes, you just grit your teeth, you spend the money, you do it, because you know that over time it's going to pay. And that it's exactly right, though. Some years it just doesn't seem to work. But I will say, the more stuff you throw in there, the better chance you have to get a payoff every year. So we're throwing, anytime we seed wheat or rye, we're throwing roughly 30 biologicals in, plus about 3 or 4 fungicides, plus an insecticide. Well, something in there usually hits. So I'm not saying we gain tremendous yield or anything, but if we at least gain a bushel or whatever, that really helps make pay for it. And then, you know, it really makes up for it on those years where we get 5 or 10 bushels.
Jared also asked, he said, you guys talk a lot about Prepare. I haven't used that one before. I've been using 2 ounces of Sharpen as a pre-emerge herbicide, and it's worked great on my farm. Yep. What are the situations where I would consider using Prepare or adding the Prepare to my Sharpen?
Grass. It's going to help you on grass. So if you've got some downy brome, you have some foxtails, any of the grasses, that's where you get the help. So Prepare has some activity on non-ALS resistant broadleaves because it is an ALS herbicide, but obviously with the Sharpen, that's going to kill pretty much all broadleaves, so you don't even have to worry about that portion of it. But yeah, for as little money as it is, when it's $3 or $4 an acre, you know, you could certainly throw that in and get good grass suppression.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Jared. Get this one for Randy out in Colorado. He said, my dealer is pushing me even harder than normal to prepay this year. And let's face it, his discounts look pretty good. My question for you, you guys talk about prepay pros and cons quite often. What should I look for and what should I watch out for in a prepay deal?
Well, the number one thing is that your money's good. So if you aren't going to get the product for a long time, that's concerning. I mean, as long as you're confident the dealer isn't going broke, then it's fine. Otherwise, if you are worried about it, you can always take the product home with you. The other things I would ask for would be, okay, if I want to swap this product out, can I get my money back and use that at the prepay price for something else? Can I get interest on the money if I don't use the money? Can I get a refund on the money if I don't use the money? You know, just those kind of things in the event that disaster strikes in the spring. And this is all top of mind for us because we've had a lot of farmers in our region the last couple of years that have had prevent plant. Well, if you don't get anything planted, some guys are getting their money back, plus they're getting interest. We've got other guys that aren't getting the money back, and in fact, they're getting charged fees because they didn't take the product. So ask the questions first before you prepay.
All right. Thank you for that question, Randy. Really appreciate that. And this one comes from Bob in Kansas. We've got about a minute left here. And he says, I'm looking for a fall herbicide program. I've got a mare's tail challenge on my farm, and I'm going to be strip tilling later on in the season, and then I'm going to plant corn next spring. I'm wondering, is dicamba or 2,4-D my best option? If so, how much could I use safely?
Quarted dicamba. I'd use 1 quart of dicamba this fall. We've done it. It's worked out fantastically well. It'll kill almost every broadleaf out there, and it will wipe out your mare's tail. The key is spray when it's warm. Take a nice day. Like today for us, it's 80 degrees. So take an afternoon like this, shut the combine down, spray when it's nice, and it'll work great.
All right. Thanks for the question, Bob. Yeah, we get a lot of fall herbicide questions, and it does certainly give you a window of time here where you can knock out some of those tough winter annuals or perennial weeds. And then you've also got, I guess Bob's in Kansas, you've also got winter coming up, which could help knock those weeds out too if you don't completely get them with the herbicide. But look for those good spray days. You may have to shut the combine down for an afternoon. And like, for example, today on our farm, it's not windy and it's really warm. It's a good spray day. If you have those kind of opportunities, you just have to take them. We don't get many of them in the fall. Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.